Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get back to the Major League Baseball postseason for their second half of the wild card round tonight and why the worst thing for Major League Baseball may actually be the best thing. Plus, with everything going on with Urban Meyer, this is actually a big week for Trevor Lawrence. Get to all that coming up. But as we start to look ahead here midweek to the upcoming games this weekend in college football, it won't be a top-tier game, but of course around here a game of interest when South Carolina travels to Tennessee. This was one of those games to start the year that I said could be a toss-up for South Carolina. It's a winnable game. Not one you're expected to win, but one you can win. And in the last week or two, a couple of teams in the SEC don't quite look as good as we thought they would be. But Tennessee coming off a big win, this suddenly looks like maybe a little bit of a tougher game than just a week ago. Joining us now to talk about Tennessee, this matchup, and even just the SEC, is a former Tennessee wide receiver and captain, spent some time in the NFL as well. Jason Swain is with us. Jason, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. How y'all doing?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. You can check out Swain Event as well, the Swain Event. He's on Twitter at Swain Event. Check out the website, theswainevent.com. Jason, appreciate the time. When we look back to this past week for Tennessee, the big win that they had against Missouri, setting records offensively, scoring 62 points. When you look back at that game, how much of that was Tennessee's offense compared to Missouri's defense in that route for Tennessee?
It's both. I know that's probably not the answer that you want, but it was both. I mean, Tennessee has been close at hitting some of those deep shots in the passing game for the last couple weeks. fell short of that against Pittsburgh, beat themselves against Pittsburgh. And so you look at, you know, the deep shot against Florida, ran out of gas after a drop pass on fourth down. I mean, Tennessee has been close, and they've continued to keep their spirits high, believe in the coaching, continue to be bought in. And it showed, I think, on Saturday against Mizzou. And it was a combination of Mizzou just not being ready to play and being the worst defense that I've seen in a very, very long time in the SEC. So it was a combination. Tennessee was sharp, and Mizzou was dull, which is why you got, you know, 28 points in the first quarter, and Tennessee could have put up 70 if it wasn't for a missed touchdown call from the referees and a dropped touchdown pass from Tennessee wide receiver. We're talking about 70-plus points in the SEC game.
Yeah, you're not kidding. And when I look ahead to this game against South Carolina, you know, this when the schedule came out, this was an intriguing game to me. In fact, this was the one I said stood out the most for South Carolina because you have two programs here with first-year head coaches. They have a few games under their belt now here getting to October. Let's see where these two teams are halfway through the first season under their head coach as they try to compare against one another this Saturday. For Tennessee, five games in, do you like where they've been in a small sample size? But so far, have you liked what you've seen so far, the first five games for Josh Heupel here at Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing the staff essentially do more with less. I mean, operating with 71 scholarships, and I referenced Pittsburgh a second ago, but Pittsburgh had 93 scholarship players, and Tennessee had 71 in that football game and still had a chance to win on the last possession with 13 penalties and you know, a couple turnovers. So this staff has done more with less. 30 guys hit the transfer portal. Some of those guys would have been starters this year. Some of them would have not been, but some of them would have been. And some of those guys will be very important to the depth of this team, where offensive line-wise is pretty thin in some in other areas. So, yeah, this staff has done a great job. I think a lot of people expect the defense to be like Missouri's, you know, last week. And then the Tennessee offense go and do the same thing that Heupel has been doing, you know, his coaching career on the offensive side of the football, but it hasn't necessarily worked that way. It's been a pleasant surprise on defense, And then we're seeing the offense kind of come along slowly, but surely, after what happened on Saturday against Missouri.
Yeah, when you talk about, you know, that offense and what Heupel had to inherit in a lot of areas, right, you maybe have to wait a couple of recruiting classes to get your guys in to be able to do fully what you want. We're kind of seeing that with Mike Leach. You have to kind of turn over the roster to get pieces in there that fit for you. For Heupel, with what he had here in Tennessee, and Hooker played well Saturday against Missouri, and, you know, he's a veteran quarterback, has that been a good mix this year where Heupel's been able to make this work offensively with the pieces that are there for him right now before maybe he gets his true makeup of a roster in there and be able to do what he really wants?
Yeah, but I think the moment you take over a job, the players become your players. A lot of coaches get into that mode where, hey, these are not my players. Wait till I get my players in here, and then you can really expect something. And Heupel hasn't taken that type of thinking. He's like, hey, you guys are my guys, and we're gonna learn more about each other. We're gonna love each other. We're gonna build relationships with each other. And I think you're seeing that on the football field. They're playing hard as all get out. They're playing for one another. And they trust their coaches. But what he's done with Hendon Hooker, I mean, you go look at Hendon's time at Virginia Tech, and it's the reason why he's a transfer portal. Virginia Tech didn't feel like he was the answer for their program, and Hendon came here because he knew it was an opportunity for himself to play. But he didn't win the job at the beginning of the fall camp because of maybe some turnovers. But in the last two games, he has about turned the football over. He's almost throwing 70%. And he has multiple touchdowns. So it just goes to show you that Josh Heupel and company bringing the best out of a guy like Hendon Hooker that another top-off team did not see in their plans long-term.
Talking with former Tennessee wide receiver Jason Swain. When it comes to this game Saturday against South Carolina, I just looked up the spread right before we had you come on, and I was surprised to see Tennessee's favored by 10.5 this Saturday against South Carolina. For you, does that number seem right? Do you think there is about a two-score separation right now between these two teams and programs?
Yeah, I do. Just the simple fact that Carolina doesn't score the football easy, and it's a little bit tougher for those guys. I look at Tennessee's offensive line, and if Tennessee had a sitting depth quarterback that couldn't move, then this would be perfect for South Carolina. I still think that Carolina's front is going to present some issues at some point to the football game. And Tennessee will have to do their homework and make sure they handle their business to make sure that it doesn't get them beat. But I like Hendon Hooker's mobility. I like how hard his defense is playing right now. I saw the Kentucky-South Carolina game, and, Kentucky basically gave Carolina multiple opportunities to go win that game, but offensively just couldn't get anything going. And I think that's going to hurt South Carolina in this matchup because Tennessee moves at a fast pace and puts a lot of pressure on the defense, but it puts a lot of pressure on the offense, too. You have to match those points. So I think that's going to be difficult for South Carolina to be able to do.
Let's go back to your playing days because you were part of some wild games against the Gamecocks. You won 3 of 4 matchups during your playing career. When you think back to those games, what stands out from your playing days going up against South Carolina?
Just great corners. I mean, you look at the NFL, Stephon Gilmore, guys like Jonathan Joseph, this past year. South Carolina puts in great, great secondary players, and that's something that's always been the case. My freshman year, I went up against Dante Robinson, who went on to be a first-round pick. And so I've went up against some really good players at Carolina. Things that stand out is the great home atmosphere there. The chicken is a little annoying for me, but I think the sandstorm is amazing. It's awesome. I love it. It hypes me up. As a player, so night games there are awesome. But just it's good to see the staff there in South Carolina. I got a lot of relationships with a lot of guys on that staff. I was talking to some people the other day that South Carolina staff has more Tennessee ties than Tennessee staff. You look at Greg Atkins, you look at Coach Beamer, Montreal Hardesty, I played with him, and then Coach Satterfield. Beamer and Satterfield were GAs when I played in Tennessee, so I got a lot of respect for that South Carolina staff, and I wish them nothing but the best, except for on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Talking with Jason Swain, who played for Tennessee. Since you brought that up, let me follow up about that with this coaching staff, since you have a little familiarity with them as coaches. Do you like this fit? Do you think Beamer and Satterfield and company could be the guys to get the Gamecocks back to where they hope to be?
Yes, because I know what kind of men they are. I know what type of guy Montreal Hardesty and Greg Atkins are. It's about the student athlete. They care about them. They're genuine. And I think the coaches in college football who are genuine, those are the coaches who are going to win. Because the day and age of the transfer portal and NIL, you can't be fake and phony and have kids want to come play for you. I think Arkansas is a great example of Sam Pittman. He's genuine. You can tell the end of that Georgia-Arkansas game, Georgia players going up, showing him love, hugging on his neck, and the way that Arkansas has turned things around in just year two just speaks to Sam Pittman as a person. I think Carolina staff got a lot of guys just like Sam Pittman, which is why I think those guys will be successful. I really do truly believe that.
Before we let you go, branching away from Tennessee and South Carolina, when you look at college football right now, is there any team in the SEC or even just in college football in general that you think could catch up to Georgia or Alabama? Is there another team out there that you think could catch them on a certain Saturday or could even keep up with those two teams right now?
Not right now. Not right now. You know, the point of the season is peaking at the right time. And so if you're Georgia or Alabama, you don't want to peak too early. We've seen other teams peak too early and kind of fall off. But you want to peak at the right time. November, you want to win, obviously, right now, but you want to win and improve and be able to work on things so that way when you get to November, when it really, really matters, you are a fine, well-oiled machine. But right now, I don't think anyone can consistently score on Georgia's defense offensively. They run the football well. They lean on you on the offensive line. And they have a quarterback. It doesn't matter who's starting that protects the football. So, you know, if someone's going to beat Georgia, it's going to have to be forcing Georgia to throw the football like Alabama was able to do last year. And as far as Alabama, I mean, Bryce Young is cool. He's calm. He's collected. He's accurate with the football. Not right now. We'll see. Later on in the season, maybe an injury or something may change it.
Right. Certainly. He's Jason Swain, played for Tennessee, spent some time in the NFL as well on Twitter at Swain Event, and check out SwainEvent.com as his show is on the air every morning throughout the week. Jason, appreciate the time. Enjoy the game on Saturday, and appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thank you all for the opportunity. Y'all have a blessed day.
Hey, you as well. Pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Jason Swain, who was a captain and wide receiver for Tennessee about 15 years ago and then spent a little time with the Chicago Bears. Appreciate him joining us to start to look ahead to this game on Saturday. You know, I give you the tasty top five every week. This is not one of those games. Well, I haven't put my list together, so I don't want to say that too soon. But going back to Monday, we looked ahead already to this weekend in college football because there are some really intriguing games, most notably Penn State and Iowa. Huge game, two top five teams. Of course, you have the rivalry of Texas and Oklahoma. That's another big one. Texas is outside of that Arkansas game. Everybody remembers the Arkansas game, but otherwise they've been playing pretty well this year. Oklahoma, I have on upset alert. So I don't know if Tennessee, South Carolina, especially with Tennessee favored by double digits, I don't know if that cracks the list of top games this weekend. Of course, if you're a Gamecock fan, it's the one you're most interested in. But my point being, this is still a very intriguing game. In fact, it's the game that I said going into the season, this was the one I circled that said this is the biggest game of the year. Not Clemson, because at the time I thought, you know, Clemson, they're going to win by 30 points. Who cares? Right? Not Florida, not A&M. I thought these games, no, South Carolina can't win those games. I don't feel as strongly about that right now, the way those teams are playing, but I thought this would be a great litmus test, be a good measuring stick. Right? You're almost 6 weeks into the season here. Yeah, this is game number six for South Carolina and Tennessee. So, you know, you're 6 weeks in, first-year head coach. For South Carolina, you have to go on the road to Tennessee, which is obviously more difficult than welcoming a Kentucky to your building or, you know, a Vanderbilt. And it's a good measuring stick to see, okay, they have a first-year head coach, you have a first-year head coach. Let's see who's off to the better first step here half of the season in. Plus, Tennessee, we know about the drama they had and the whole McDonald's story, money in McDonald's bags, and Jeremy Pruitt did not leave them in a great spot. And to a lesser degree, similar to Will Muschamp, where it wasn't that bad, but with just reports of, you know, guys not happy with the coach, alumni not feeling welcomed. It was more about the name on the back of the jersey than the front. Anytime you fire a coach, typically you get stories like that. But, you know, there was some bad mojo, bad vibes around the program at the time of the coaching changes for each of these. You're kind of starting over, resetting, bringing in a new head coach. Okay, here we go, six games in. Let's see who is further along down that right track. And we'll find out on Saturday. Tennessee's favored now by 10.5. I think that's a little overreaction to this past weekend. South Carolina played a close game with Troy. Tennessee put 62 points on Missouri and could have went for a lot more if they chose to and blew out Missouri. I think it's a little inflated because of what we saw this past week. I'm surprised that number is that high. I don't know if I'd pick South Carolina to win on the road, but I do think it's an intriguing matchup. And let's see. Tennessee, year one of Josh Heupel. Shane Beamer, year one at South Carolina. Who's in the better position right now? We'll find out on Saturday. Appreciate the time from Jason. Speaking of college football, when we come back, which team has been the most disappointing in college football this year? Which coach is coaching for his job the next few weeks as well? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Which team has been the most disappointing this year in college football? And which coach will be working for his job the next couple of weeks? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jason Swain, former Tennessee wide receiver. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. So this morning, Joe, can you grab the breaking news sounder, actually, because we have some breaking news to get to, and this is big news before we get to the college football stuff. How about this? This is a big deal. The Carolina Panthers have traded for Stephon Gilmore. Adam Schefter just broke this 5 minutes ago while we were in the commercial break. Stephon Gilmore, now a Carolina Panther. Now, the first report this morning from Schefter was that the Patriots, I think he said release. I don't think it was are going to release. I think they put it out there like it already happened, released Gilmore. So I thought he was already out there or going to be out there on the market as a you know, like a free agent on the waiver wire, and teams would have to go after him. And that's why all the rumors this morning and the write-ups already were, well, Tom Brady, the Buccaneers need defensive back help, reunite him in Tampa Bay with Tom Brady. And I thought that's the way it would go. The Buccaneers already went out and got Richard Sherman, and as we saw on Sunday night, I mean, the Patriots just picked on him that whole first half. Sherman, at least not yet. Maybe he doesn't have his legs underneath him yet, playing for the first time this season, but he just doesn't. I don't think he has it anymore. He wasn't that great last year. He's had some injury issues. I mean, ever since the Achilles issue, he hasn't been the same. They still need help in that secondary. It seemed like the perfect fit. Gilmore reunite with Brady, try to go win another Super Bowl in Tampa Bay. They need help in that position. And then 5 minutes ago, Schefter tweets out that the Panthers have traded for Gilmore. And this is his real account. I'm not getting fooled here. So I'm shocked by this. And not only that he's actually getting traded when it seemed like he was already released, but to the Carolina Panthers. If you're a Panthers fan, you have to be ecstatic of this year. Not only the 3-1 start, but the fact that these are now two good cornerbacks they've gone out and traded for. You don't see a lot of trades during a season. The Panthers are going for it. Right? J.C. Horn gets injured, and they don't just sit back on their hands and think like, oh, that's too bad. We got off to a good start. There goes Horn. Okay, well, hopefully he'll be okay next year. We'll piece it together in the meantime. No, they said forget that. Went out and got Henderson from the Jaguars, who was a top 10 pick just a year ago. Now they go out and get Gilmore, who at least when healthy, I mean, is one of the best, if not the best, cornerbacks in the league. Now he's still coming back from his injury. You know, he had that torn quad. We'll see what he's like when he gets back on the field. But the Panthers, all they gave up was a 6th-round pick. Are you kidding? In 2023, a 6th-round pick in 2023. That's nothing. I'll give up a 6th-round pick for anybody. You're not going to draft a Gilmore in the 6th round. So big news and a big deal for the Panthers. Now, why are the Patriots moving on from Gilmore? Well, it was a salary cap situation. The Patriots just don't have any money. They have $54,000 in salary cap space. You could hardly get, you know, a bag of balls with that money. So they figure we're going to need a little more salary cap space here just to get through this season. And they could go some other routes. Why would you get rid of Gilmore with how good he is, at least when healthy? Well, for the Patriots, two things. Number one, he's still rehabbing, so is it worth it when you're so tight against the salary cap to be paying somebody $500,000 per week to just rehab and not play for you? They're not really in the position where they can afford that. Number two, you could restructure his contract and sign him to a different type of deal and keep him long-term, but apparently those negotiations have not gone well. So it's just kind of the fracturing of a relationship, and they figure, well, he's not going to stick around here anyways. And he's not going to rework his deal in the meantime, so, I mean, we might as well get rid of him. Seems like things weren't going too well there, and so you might as well move on. And so that's what they did, and originally it seemed like release because the first reports were that they couldn't find a trade partner. And then suddenly now, traded to the Panthers for a 6th-round pick. So that's big time for Carolina because this defense, I mean, they got shredded pretty good by the Cowboys, but they were a top 10 defense entering that week. And to have to replace J.C. Horn and to try to do it with now a couple of guys that they've brought in, that's a big boost. So we'll see when he gets back on the field and what he looks like afterwards. But that's a big move. Plus, not to mention the fact that he's from Rock Hill, played for the Gamecocks, of course, so he's kind of returning home. I mean, the Panthers, for the time being at least, still train in the upstate. Their headquarters is going to be in Rock Hill. So it's like a return home for him as well for Gilmore. That's a big move. When you go up against Brady and even Matt Ryan to a certain extent, you need some cornerback help. You need a good secondary, especially without J.C. Horn. And for a 6th-round draft pick, that's nothing. So that's the breaking news. Adam Schefter tweeting it out just a few minutes ago that Gilmore was traded to the Panthers for a 6th-round pick. Big move. If I'm a Panthers fan, I'm very excited today. Which team has been the most disappointing in college football so far this year? Friend of the show, Dave Bartu, does a great job of all the different analytics. So I saw his list that based off of recruiting efforts, the coaches who have done the worst this year, he has a little bit of a lengthy list. It includes LSU, Florida, Florida State, Washington, Clemson, USC, UNC, Miami. I think, while all those are disappointments, I think Clemson is the obvious answer. I mean, the hopes were they were going to go compete for a national championship. And now we're talking about if they could even win the ACC. And just the way they've looked and the way they've played, that drop is the biggest. Right? Like Miami and UNC have been really disappointing as well. But what was their ceiling this year? Probably just making an ACC title game and losing to Clemson. At least that's what we thought at the beginning of the season. What was the ceiling for USC? I mean, we were talking about, hey, they could win the Pac-12 this year. Would that be enough to even get to the playoff? I don't know. Would they win a national championship this year? I don't think anybody thought that for USC. What was Florida State's ceiling this year? I think hopefully they have a winning season. So the drop-off, not as severe for those teams, but for Clemson to go from top three team in the country, going to go win a national championship again, stud quarterback, to be struggling as much as they are now, I think that's the obvious answer. I don't think that's a hot take to say that Clemson is the most disappointing team in college football. But with that said, for LSU, I'd also put them right there. In fact, I think Ed Orgeron is coaching for his job here the next couple of weeks. Now, I've said before, even going back prior to this season, I don't think he'll be the coach next year. And as this season has unfolded, I don't know if he'll even be the coach by Thanksgiving at this rate. And for LSU, they have a stretch here where they have to go to Kentucky this week, who just beat Florida. Big game. If they lose to Kentucky, I don't know if Ogeron even makes it to the next week. Then you have Florida. And despite Florida just losing to Kentucky, Florida, I still think, is the better team than LSU, and I think that's a tough game for LSU. And then after that, you got Ole Miss, and then you got Alabama, and then you got Arkansas. The next five games for LSU are against ranked teams. How many of those do we trust they can win? They just lost to number 22, Auburn. They lost to UCLA earlier this year. Their only victories right now are against Central Michigan, McNeese State, and then they snuck out of there with a win against Mississippi State, who's one of the worst teams in the conference. I don't know how many wins are left on LSU's schedule. I don't know if Ed Ogeron makes it to Thanksgiving at this rate. And so in that sense, I put LSU right up there for Clemson, where Clemson's the biggest disappointment this season for 2021. But would I be surprised if they're right back in the top 10 next year and competing for a national championship and this year is just a blip on the radar? No, not at all. For LSU, to have a coach win the national championship 2 years ago and maybe not even make it through the second follow-up season afterwards, I guess that would be the, I don't know if I'd say bigger surprise. I don't know if I even say bigger disappointment. It's a little bit different, but it'd be a huge letdown for Ed Ogeron as the encore to go 500 in 2 years and lose your job afterwards. After the season they had, they won the national championship. They went undefeated. They were dominant. We were talking about LSU as one of the best teams in college football history. And since then, they've gone 8-7 with two of those wins coming against non-Power 5 schools. He's under 500 against Power 5 schools. And as I said, I just gave you the schedule. I could see them losing all five of those games. And things could get even worse. And they're bottom, 30 in rushing yards, bottom 30 in defense. It's not just that they're losing, it's how they look. And the gap that has grown. When LSU won the national championship, they, along the way, beat Alabama, of course. Then last year, and it's not the same LSU team, but it just shows the gap. You should be closing that gap with Alabama. Instead of last year, I mean, they lost by 40 points to Alabama. We'll see how they do in a couple of weeks. This year, they'll probably lose by 40 points. In fact, that could be the nail in the coffin coming up in four more games. If he survives the next three, then they go to Alabama first week of November, and if they lose by 40, which they probably will, it's like, okay, I mean, come on, this is getting ridiculous. You won a national championship 2 years ago. Now we're right back to losing by 40 to Alabama. And maybe it should be expected with all the talent lost, but it shouldn't be accepted. I know you lost a lot of talent from that team. You lost your coordinators, but you just won a national championship. You can't go back to winning four games 2 years later. That should never be acceptable at LSU to begin with, national championship or not. But Ed Ogeron is that CEO type of coach, and when you lose good coordinators, changes everything. He lost his two coordinators from that national championship team. They have not had good coordinators since. At the beginning of the season, we talked about this, where Ed Ogeron hired last year's coordinators without interviewing them. Coaches can get a little comfortable after you win a championship. You start feeling a little good about yourself. Kick your feet up. Relax maybe a little bit, even if it's subconscious. He hired coaches last year without meeting with them. Who would do that? Who's hiring a defensive coordinator without ever sitting down with them? Are you kidding? You're going to hire a babysitter without ever meeting them? Like, oh, sure, come take care of my kids. No. You hire anybody at work without having a sit down with them? Especially when you talk about LSU and how important a defensive coordinator is for that program and what they have, their expectations are. So I don't think Ed Ogeron makes it to the end of the season. While Clemson is incredibly disappointing this year, I think that will also be right up there as incredibly disappointing for LSU. He's on the Gene Chizik route. By the way, speaking of Dave Bartu, I had some numbers crunch because I was curious. I brought this up earlier this week. What would the line be if Clemson played South Carolina this week with the way these seasons have gone? I was curious. Preseason, it was about four touchdowns. What would it be now? So I had some data, right? I had the numbers crunched, and I got a number. And according to my source and the projections and everything that they use, the model they use, if Clemson played South Carolina this Saturday, Clemson would be an 11-point favorite. 11 points, and this is on a neutral field. So if it was at Clemson, they'd be a 14-point favorite. So it'd still be double digits. If it was in Columbia, though, that means just an 8-point favorite would be Clemson, theoretically. 8-point favorite in Columbia, which this year it is in Columbia. So we're talking about if that game was played today instead of the end of the year, based off of at least this one model, Clemson would only be an 8-point favorite. but 11 points on a neutral field. By the way, South Carolina is playing Tennessee this week. Based off of that line on a neutral field, that would be about 7.5 to show you how small that gap is between those opponents. The same model told me also that Alabama would be favored by about 23 against Clemson right now. Could you imagine that line? That's how big of a difference, how big of a gap, at least this one computer model sees between those two programs here today. 23 points Alabama would be favored against Clemson. That would be something. If we were getting ready for a game between those two and talking about Alabama favored by over 3 touchdowns, right? I mean, more so than Ole Miss this past week. That's what the model sees right now in college football. So Clemson still would be about a 2-score favorite over South Carolina, but that number obviously has come down quite a bit to 11 right now on a neutral field between those two compared to, you know, typically it's in the high 20s. Speaking of Clemson, when we come back, obviously the focus in Jacksonville has been on Urban Meyer over the past few days, and for good reason. But this upcoming weekend, there's still a football game that needs to be played. There's still a football game that you have to get ready for. And it's why this week is actually a big week for Trevor Lawrence. Not just the head coach, or not so much the head coach of the Jaguars, but also the quarterback as well. And we'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Why this is a big week for Trevor Lawrence. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You can always get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can send a message to the show online by going to charlestonsportsradio.com, clicking on our show page and commenting there. Or you can always text the show. I don't give out this information a whole lot once we get rolling in the show, but you can always text the show as well, 843-608-1734. And on the text line, somebody sent in an image, and I've seen this floating around. They call it a meme nowadays. But it's the photo, one of the many photos of Urban Meyer the other night. Well, he was a little sauced at his own bar, and the blonde woman who was dancing up on him, there's a photo of her leaning her head on his shoulder, and you know they're smiling, they take a photo together. And the meme going around is of this photo, and it says, Urban Meyer's going to tell his wife this was Trevor Lawrence, which is just, come on, that's not right. I've seen a lot of those this year, a lot of memes on the internet trolling Trevor Lawrence with the long blonde hair and making him look like a woman. But Urban Meyer, that could be his excuse. Honey, I was just with Trevor Lawrence. We were talking plays. I don't think that would fly, especially not with some of those videos that are out there. You shouldn't be doing that with your quarterback. Now, the Urban Meyer situation is lingering on in Jacksonville, as you would imagine. Yesterday, we talked about the different statements that were put out there. The owner, Urban, gave his apology. Players are talking off the record to reporters. You know, Don Rickles, of course, legendary comedian, always said that even when he was having an off night during a stand-up set or when it wasn't a good crowd, whenever things weren't going well, he never wanted the audience to know. He always had to stay sharp, stay on his game, even when he wasn't at his best. Even when, whatever, he was a little off his game, maybe he was under the weather, maybe he just didn't have it that night. We all go through that, even if you're not a performer. You show up at work one day, you're just not feeling it. You got something going on, you didn't get enough sleep, you don't feel well, whatever it is. I deal with it, you know, sometimes here where you just, the words don't come out as well. You're stumbling with all your comments. You're just not articulate for that certain day, whatever it may be. For Don Rickles, he always said, no matter what, right? Maybe I wouldn't be articulate. Maybe just I was off my game. Maybe the crowd wasn't into it. You can never let the crowd know. You can never make yourself vulnerable on stage. You can never acknowledge, like, oh, I'm having a tough night, or, oh, these jokes aren't going over well. You can never let the crowd in on your struggles because, as Rickles would say, you know, that's when you become vulnerable to them. Then they start heckling you. Then you give the power to the audience. If you go on stage as a comedian and halfway through your set say, like, oh, I'm off my game tonight, right? That just opens the door to hecklers taking over, and from there it's only going to get worse. And my point being, for Urban Meyer, it's kind of similar. When you put yourself in this situation, now you walk into that locker room, like, you kind of just gave the power to the player. You kind of made yourself vulnerable. Right, reports were that players were laughing at him when he tried to apologize yesterday, that he's lost the locker room. I mean, that's kind of what happens when you put yourself in that situation now. And they see these videos, and they, you know, they're grown men. They probably don't care. It's just that it's their head coach, and he's a married man. He's a grandfather. It's like, what are you doing? You made us fly home by ourselves. You stayed up there in Ohio to hang out with this 24-year-old woman because, of course, the internet found her identity as well. She's a 24-year-old graduate of Ohio State and has worked events at the restaurant as a photographer. She works like in marketing up there. You can find out everything you need to know about her now because that's how quickly the internet works. Right? But Urban, like, what are you doing with this 24-year-old girl while your wife is hanging out with the babysitting the grandkids at home? And I thought of the Don Rickles line, you know, with the situation. But in regards to Trevor Lawrence, why this is a big week for Trevor Lawrence in particular is because the Jaguars take on the Titans. Now, the Jags are 0-4. I whiffed on the Jaguars this year. I thought they would be improved. Took me not very long to see, yep, I was wrong. They're not going to be much better, even with Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence. And this story from the past weekend, I guess, is part of the reason why. Part of the reason why I shouldn't have trusted Urban Meyer to help turn this team around quickly. But when I look at the AFC South, despite the Jaguars being 0-4, the Titans are only 2-2, and they're in first place. And all four teams in the AFC South have a negative point differential. There's not a good team in this division. So even though you're 0-4, there's a 17th game this year. The Jags are not out of it just yet, as crazy as that sounds. Because if you beat the Titans this week, well, now suddenly you're one game out of first place. You're 1-4, but you're one game out of first with the tiebreaker. So this is their season. You lose to the Titans, you fall to 0-5, and now you drop with the tiebreaker, even though you'll play them again later this season, but for the time being, you drop three games out of the division. It's like, okay, yep, we could pack it in now. We're only 5 weeks into the season. We're already three games out of first. Yeah, this we haven't won a game yet. Yeah, forget about it. But not only that, for Trevor Lawrence, two things with his performance against the Titans this week. Number one, that Titans defense is not good. We just saw Zach Wilson play the best game of his career against that Titans defense. So now, Trevor Lawrence, it's your turn. Lawrence played well against the Bengals, probably his best performance of his young career so far. Now you get extra time. You have 10 days to get ready, to decompress, to focus in on your next opponent. They have a bad defense. They don't score a ton of points either. It's not like you have to keep up in a track meet, right? Zach Wilson just beat them last week with that lousy Jets defense. They were all over Tannehill. This is an opportunity for Trevor Lawrence to really showcase his potential, like Zach Wilson did this past week. Zach Wilson played really good after halftime. He made a nice highlight throw on a touchdown downfield to Corey Davis that you've probably seen on ESPN all week. And Jets fans came away seeing that and thinking like, oh, wait a minute, we may have something here. Trevor Lawrence hasn't played quite as bad as Zach Wilson, but he also hasn't reached his potential just yet a month into his career. If he goes out there, here's a chance to play well against the Titans, and you start to see those flashes. He starts to build confidence, and you start to say, okay, here we go. Not only that, but you'll continue to be compared to other quarterbacks. And if Trevor Lawrence goes out there and lays an egg, you'll say, well, Zach Wilson just beat this team last week. He played really well. And Trevor Lawrence picked ahead of him, and he did not play well against this Titans team. So I think it's a big spot for the Jaguars team. I think it's a big spot for Trevor Lawrence. Then you factor in the second part of it for Trevor Lawrence is this drama around Urban Meyer. Then you throw that in. The distraction from the head coach. The drama. The concern that he's lost the locker room. Things aren't going well right now on or off the field for Jacksonville. And if you're Trevor Lawrence, you're the quarterback. You're like the captain. You have to corral your team. You have to get everybody back together and on the right track and go out there focused and play a good game on Sunday because this is probably the most important game of their season. You know, they've done studies that kids that grow up, and I don't want to, you know, compare this to something far more serious, but kids that grow up in chaotic households, they've done studies that they do, in fact, mature quicker. They've done studies on the brain, and they have found, looking at these kids, you know, the brains, they're more mature than kids who are raised in stable upbringings. And you could understand why. Maybe the parents aren't home. They're not around. They're not as supportive. You have to help raise your younger siblings if you're the oldest, right? Your parents aren't there to do it. Or you're moving around from location to location. Or maybe, you know, your parents get divorced. There's new people in your life. At a young age, you have to get accustomed to these strangers now becoming, you know, a step-parent or living in-house and going through a divorce for your parent. All that stuff that hopefully kids don't ever have to go through. But it forces you to kind of grow up faster. So for Trevor Lawrence, this week, you're dealing with a head coach, right? A chaotic household right now, if you will, for an NFL franchise. a head coach out there making headlines, distractions. You have to do interviews. Media's asking you about it. The coach is apologizing to you. You had to cancel a team meeting yesterday. The locker room is split, this and that. You're dealing with more things in that locker room than just trying to worry about the Tennessee Titans defense. And you know what? Maybe it helps him grow up a little bit faster as well. Maybe it helps him mature as an NFL quarterback a little bit quicker. It's a big week for Trevor Lawrence as well. How can you respond with all this noise around the team, and how well can you play in an opportunity against that Titans defense? Because Zach Wilson played pretty well this past week. Plus, for the Jaguars, your season's on the line. It's a big week for Trevor Lawrence as well. We'll wrap up Hour 2 when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me, and I want you only. Don't turn me home again, I just can't.
It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Wrapping up Hour 2 on what is National Coaches Day. Happy National Coaches Day. I've always said on this show, I've never understood why a coach always keeps his title. Somebody could have coached you in Little League. You see them 30 years later, you still refer to them as coach. In fact, we had that situation growing up. One of my best friend's uncle always coached in town, but I don't think he ever coached more than, you know, all-star baseball for middle schoolers. And even he was never even my coach. Everyone just called him coach. That's what he was known as, Coach G. People that he never even coached, like other adults are calling him, hey, Coach G. Everyone knows him as Coach G. Just because he coaches like Little League baseball. So it's National Coaches Day. I'm sure there's, if you played sports growing up, there's certain coaches that you can recall or that you played for, or maybe had a big, played a big role in your upbringing, your life, those impactful coaches. So happy National Coaches Day. It's also National Mad Hatter Day, National Noodle Day, and National Orange Wine Day. Did you have some noodles for lunch, Joe? Right, you had some Asian food in here, right?
No, I had rice.
Rice, no noodles. It smelled good.
Hi.
Yes, I love Chinese. I love Chinese food. Let me tell you.
Japanese.
You got Japanese? Either
That's
way.
Right.
That's fine. Either one.
Now, also being stuff. National Coaches Day.
Yes.
Would that include? I forget what they're called in Kung Fu, but in karate and judo, the teacher is called a sensei.
Sure.
Okay.
Why not?
Does that include are they included on National Coaches
they
Day?
They should be. Yeah.
They're teaching a sport.
That's right. It's also National Walk to School Day. Back in my day, you used to have to walk uphill both ways in the snow. It was brutal.
And occasionally had to kill a grizzly bear with a loose leaf notebook.
Yes. It was tough. Hey, did you see William Shatner is going into space with Jeff Bezos? How about that? He's 90 years old. I mean, at that point, well, you know, you might as well give it a try, see what happens. 90 years old.
Is he going to be the captain for this mission?
I don't know. I also don't know if this is going to be one of those quasi-space trips, right, where some people think that, that's not actually space if you just go high enough. I imagine that's what it is because it's with Jeff Bezos, so that's what they're doing. But there you go. What's next? We're going to send, like, Mark Hamill into space or whatever? Were you a Star Trek guy back in the day?
I liked the original version when I was a kid. I never got into any of the subsequent series.
Okay. Well, 90-year-old Bill Shatner is heading to space. If you're born with the last name Shatner, is that a cool thing or a bad thing for a kid? I don't know if that's a good name to have. Bill Shatner going to space. Coming up, why the Yankees lost last night actually has me worried about the Atlanta Braves. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.